From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Ollie. Thank you very much. It's Wednesday. It is February 5th. How are you doing? It's been a lovely day here in Salford. Lovely day. Fog early on. Fog lifted. Lovely day. It's very spring-like, even though we're still in the winter. And it's still bright outside as I begin the Richie Allen radio show. That's a nice change. The winter is on its way out. Welcome to your Richie Allen show. Live on multiple platforms around the world. Always good to be here.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Can't wait to chat with Charlie Pixley Charles in the second hour of the program. The suppression of cancer cures. Charles believes it's been going on, well, forever. Back in the 1990s, he was put in jail for selling a book about cancer. The book is still just about available. The book was banned, but you can get it. It's called Do No Harm. We'll talk to Charlie Pixley, that's right, about that in the second hour of the programme. I wrongly called Charles Exley a bit earlier on Twitter. My apologies to Charles. You're thinking about Chris Exley today. It's Charles Pixley. He joins the programme. He's got an incredible story to tell. So stay tuned for that. Before that, though, Jim Fetzer wings in from Wisconsin. Madison, Wisconsin. It's been quite a while since Jim was on. We're going to talk Trump impeachment, State of the Union. We might even talk about Sandy Hook as well. Jim Fetzer live in about 20 minutes' time on your Richie Allen radio show. Yeah, so there you are. Apologies again to Charles. It's Charles Pixley, of course, as I was typing that on Twitter. I definitely had Chris Exley on the brain anyway. You know, it's a BBG thing to do. Definitely not the BBC. Right, let's crack straight on with the roundup because time is precious. Lisa Bloom is representing victims of Jeffrey Epstein, the serial pederast, paedophile, friend of the rich and famous and politically connected. Epstein hung himself in jail. Yeah. And Lisa Bloom, who's representing some of the victims, wants Prince Andrew to go to the United States of America. Fat chance. This is a novel, but nonetheless a ridiculous development. Bloom appeared on television today with Rad Seeger. She was in New York with Rad Seeger. He represents the Dunn family. You might remember Harry Dunn was knocked off his motorbike and killed by Anne Sekulis, who is the wife of a US diplomat. She doesn't have diplomatic immunity, but the bitch legged it to the United States, having given an indication to the police that she wouldn't do that. Sorry for using that word, but it's a dreadful thing to do. The family of Harry Dunn, they want justice. So bizarrely today, Epstein's victim's lawyer appeared with a representative for the Dunn family and said, let's have a quid pro quo. Let's send Andrew West, the way of Horatio Alger, send him west, and send Anne Sekulis east. Let's swap them over, and let's get justice for all concerned. Here is Lisa Bloom speaking with, alongside the representative in America for the Dunn family, Rad Seeger. That's right, have a listen.
Both Ms. Sekulis and Prince Andrew must cooperate with law enforcement. I call upon my government, the United States, to return Ms. Sekulis to the UK to face justice there. She will, of course, have the right to an attorney and to present any defenses she may have, and she is presumed innocent. And I call upon the Crown in the UK to require Prince Andrew to come to the US to answer law enforcement's questions about Jeffrey Epstein and his own behavior. And he, too, should have the right to counsel, fairness, and the presumption of innocence.
Get on a plane and come and do what I'm doing and sit next to Kiki and help her and help the other victims get that closure and that sense of justice that we all need. There is no other way There are millions of people in the UK who are following the Harry Dunn campaign because they, like us, believe in the rule of law. No more. It's time to end this and for both Prince Andrew and Anne Sekulis to get on the plane and help the victims of Jeffrey Epstein and the family of Harry Dunn.
Yeah, Randy Andy isn't going anywhere. Mummy will see to that. But then again, who knows? I don't know anything. I say this a lot. What do I know? Stranger things happen at sea. So we'll wait and see. Here's an interesting one I came across on the BBC website today. There was a meeting of parents, the parents of school children, in Saline, Michigan. Okay? And the parents of students who attend a school in Saline in Michigan came together because of racism at this elementary school. Okay, so all these parents came to a meeting. How do we deal with racism? Because some children are being racially abused. And one parent is explaining about his own son and how his own son was racially abused. And then it all kind of kicked off. And this is a microcosm of the macrocosm, so I thought it was worth playing it. You'll hear a gentleman who originates from Mexico, and his son goes to a school in Michigan. Have a listen to this.
I remember when I went to his bedroom to say goodnight, and he was crying because of the abuse that he was enduring in this school system.
Then why didn't you stay in Mexico?
Why don't you stay in Mexico?
Did you hear him?
Unbelievable. And I laughed at that today. This is on the BBC website. You can see more of it there. And I thought to myself, it's a perfect microcosm. You know? Because, Jesus, this is what's going to bury the human race in quicksand. Identity politics. Seeing yourself as unique. Seeing your identity as righteous. And under constant attack. And seeing others as the enemy. Everybody else is a barrier to your advancement. Your identity, your race, your person. You know what I mean, right? The group that you have assigned yourself to is under constant attack. It's a race to the bottom. And everybody else is a barrier to your advancement. And the establishment loves it. And it is everywhere. And it is getting more and more and more common. And I don't see a way out of it. That's why I said it's going to bury us all. Imagine the things that are going on in the world. The things that are being done to the human race by psychopathic criminals using things like fake climate change and other things to box us into this prison planet. And we're arguing with one another over which of us is the more oppressed. It's crazy, isn't it? We don't talk about it enough. Maybe you might say, well, you talk about it a lot, Richie. Maybe we don't talk about it enough. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, was on Sky News with Kay Burley this morning, the old ginger ninja. And he was talking about coronavirus. But he also put the boot into John Bercow, the former Speaker. Bercow is facing allegations that he bullied his staff and bullied others. It's everywhere today. So Matt Hancock put the boot in.
The ways that he treated people were in public was not acceptable. And in those roles, in these roles, you know, that I have and that he had as Speaker, I think that it's not only important not to bully people, it's important to try to set an example. And I've seen the row about whether or not he should get a peerage based on convention. I seem to recall John Burke himself saying that he was happy to rip up conventions when it suited him. And the thing is that being a legislator is a privilege, whether as an MP or as a peer, and nobody should expect that by rights.
Yeah, the idea is that Burke won't receive a peerage. He won't take a seat in the House of Lords which would be unprecedented. Now, you might think that's not that important, Richie. No, it isn't. But I wanted to play you that particular piece of audio just so you can hear Kay Burley's response. Because when Hancock finishes, as you just heard, she winds up the interview. And she winds it up in glorious ginger ninja style. This is quality. Have a listen to this.
Health Secretary, it's good to talk to you. I know you're busy trying to save us from this coronavirus, so I'll let you crack on.
Thank you very much
indeed for joining us. Really appreciate it. 8:15, you're watching Kay Burley at breakfast.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I nearly choked on my cornflakes this morning.
I know you're busy trying to save us from this coronavirus, so I'll let you crack on.
What?
I know you're busy trying to save us from this coronavirus, so I'll let you crack on.
You're busy trying to save us from this coronavirus, Health Secretary, so I'll let you crack on. Do you know how many people have been diagnosed with coronavirus? And I don't even believe that. In the UK, 60 plus million people. Two people. 450 out of 7 billion people on planet Earth have died from the alleged coronavirus, which is a crock of you-know-what, as you well know. Love that. Thanks, Health Secretary.
I know you're busy trying to save us from this coronavirus, so I'll let you crack on.
Trying to save us from the coronavirus. He's got a cape with a big MH on it for Matt Hancock, saving us from the coronavirus. Now, the Cambridge Students Union, this made a lot of people laugh today. They've said that military personnel shouldn't be permitted to attend freshers' fairs. Okay, why? Well, because the presence of military personnel could detrimentally affect the mental health of students. That's a direct quote from Stella Swain. Stella Swain. She's the welfare and rights officer at Cambridge University Students' Union. She wants to ban societies from bringing firearms to the fair. Military stuff. She says that this illustrates implicit approval of the use of firearms. And it's not good. And violence. She said the fair shouldn't be seen as a recruitment opportunity for military organisations. The presence of firearms and military people at the Freshers' Fair is alarming and off-putting for some students and has the potential to detrimentally affect students' mental welfare, said Stella Swain. Now, Colonel Richard Kemp is a former commander of British forces in Afghanistan. He's not happy. And he was on talk radio with Mike Graham to explain why. Here he is, Richard Kemp.
Yeah, well, not really. It's pretty standard, as you say. It's a further example of the plankery we see on a daily basis now.
Plankery
nowadays, but I don't think it's. I don't think one can say that it's students generally. I think these are political activists,
yeah.
Students Union, who simply want to demolish every last shred of our national establishment. They want to tear down everything that's good in our society and replace it with their left-wing nonsense. And that's what this is all about.
Well, that is the truth, isn't it?
What? What did he just say there to the presenter? What did he say?
Their left-wing nonsense. And that's what this is all about.
Well, that is the truth, isn't it? Because
no! You're supposed to argue with him. That's your job, man. You're supposed to play the devil's advocate in the absence of anybody else and argue with him and say to him, well, hang on a second. You know, after the Iraq war, Afghanistan, the Libya debacle, maybe people are pissed off of soldiers, Richard. Maybe they're pissed off of armies, Richard. Maybe. What do you think of that? This idiot on talk radio just agrees with him.
It's unfortunately, and I was kind of correct, I think, when I was trying to point out these people.
I was correct, I think, says the presenter. Jesus Christ.
These people are supposedly future members of society. They're supposedly future, you know, captains of industry or, you know, people who have important jobs in the civil service or maybe even become politicians. You know, what kind of preparation for the real world is this?
Yeah, it's not. It's a preparation for a fantasy world, which unfortunately is creeping increasingly into the real world, and the sort of people that concoct these political correct nonsense snowflakery, they often nowadays seem to be taking it forward into the adult world as well, and it's completely unacceptable. I mean, the one thing that when you talk about military presence, military weapons or uniforms presence at the Freshers' Fair in Cambridge, what these people clearly don't understand is the reason they're able to do any of this stuff at Cambridge, the reason they're able to study there, is because of their, you know, among others, their forebears among the students at Cambridge who laid their lives down and gave their lives for their country, serving in the armed forces to keep this country free and to enable Cambridge students to continue to study.
Ah, they might be grateful for the for those who went before them, fighting in wars to give them the freedom that they enjoyed. That reminded me of this.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Don't question this wonderful society that you have, you know. Don't ask us questions. Don't criticise the military. We provided this blanket of freedom for you and all that garbage. You know, you can make a case that the last time anybody attacked the UK was the German Luftwaffe, and the UK was entitled to defend itself. Since then, the let's say Great Britain has prosecuted wars of aggression around the world against countries that never raised a finger in anger against the United Kingdom. The military in this country doesn't protect the citizens of this country from an external threat because none exists. None! What the military in this country does is it helps to maim and murder and destroy people in massive numbers around the world based on lies. But of course, Mike Graham, fucking useless presenter on talk radio, he's not going to say that, is he, to Richard Kemp? Are you seriously expecting students at universities to be grateful to the military for giving them their freedoms to go to uni? What freedoms? What have you done? Who's ever attacked the UK? Arsehole. Yes, indeed. 20 minutes past the hour. Hey, the BBC TV licence is in the news. There will be public consultation on possibly decriminalising not having one. If you watch television, BBC, you've got to have a licence. And if you don't, you could be fined up to £1,000. And if you don't pay that, you could go to prison. So Culture Secretary Nicky Morgan says, we're going to have a look at this. I'm not sure. We'll wait and see. But every BBC talk show was talking about this today. Couple of very interesting sound bites from the Scottish Five Live breakfast guy, Nicky Campbell. He's obviously been listening to the Richie Allen radio show. Have a listen.
Social media has changed the news landscape and the way that information is delivered, and people far less than before, people want their opinions reinforced now. They don't want their opinions challenged. I think we've really noticed that in the last 5 years. Some people call it an echo chamber. But, you know, there's less of a situation where people actually want to hear those who disagree with them. And the BBC and ITN and other places are forums for that. You know, at least, I mean, it's at least an attempt to be impartial and balanced. Maybe those days have gone and it's all going to be Fox TV type of stuff.
How interesting, Nicky. It's exactly what we've been talking about on this programme for years. Echo chambers, very aggressive presenters telling you the way it is rather than trying to get to the bottom of it by exploring every angle. No, just telling you how things are. Maybe the BBC will have to go down that route. Here's Campbell talking about fake news and also BBC presenters' own opinions.
Yeah, and in this age of fake news, we have to be very, very careful what we wish for. And of course, if we went to subscription, Rachel, we could then let loose. We could express our opinion, wouldn't we? I'll tell you.
I don't think people want to hear our opinion.
We want to hear. they would be shocked and surprised, perhaps.
They express their opinions constantly. They're just not aware they're doing it. BBC presenters. You know, it's very different. BBC programmes sound very different now to how they sounded 25 years ago. Now they are constantly, through the intonation of their voices and through blatantly saying, you know, what they think about certain things, impartiality is gone. Funnily enough, we'll be talking about this with David Sedgwick, who's got a book out. He's got another book out about the BBC. He'll be on the programme next week talking about that. In the meantime, it's 23 minutes past the hour. It's time to get my first guest on. From Madison, Wisconsin, it's none other than Jim Fetzer. Love Jim Fetzer. And Charles Pixley joining me later in the second hour of the programme too. Music from Bee Gees. Love this, 1997. Top tune this, Called Alone, back in three. Bee Gees on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 26 minutes past five, Salford, Greater Manchester, drive time. Nothing like it, always good to be in your company. Thanks for the tweet so far. Well, the BBC all over it. It astounds me, on the one hand, the interest in the UK, the interest in the impeachment proceedings against US President Donald Trump. Live coverage right across UK media of the impeachment proceedings. Senators will cast their final vote in the impeachment trial later on, and it is a shoe-in that they will vote with Trump. They will not vote to find him guilty of behaving improperly and conduct unbecoming and all the rest of it. Trump is going to get a clean bill of health. My first guest is a great friend of ours. We've known him many, many years. A great academic, writer, broadcaster, a doyen of critical thinking, publisher as well. Check out Moonrock Books. I'll put links up to where you can find out all about that if you're new to that. Let's welcome back to the show, live from Madison in Wisconsin, our friend Jim Fetzer. Jim, welcome back to our programme. How are you? And he's there, is Jim, but we can't hear him. Jim, you might have that microphone muted there. I've got you now, I think. Hi, Jim. I think he's fiddling away there. He's typing to me. There might be an issue with the microphone there. Ah, he's going to get his other computer. No problems, Jim. Go and get the other computer. And let me know when you're back up and running. In fact, give us a call yourself when you get back there. We'll get you on. Yes, yes. Technical stuff. Let me remind you that in the second hour of the programme, Charles Pixley joins me. Went to prison for statements made in a book that he published back in the 1990s. The book was subsequently banned. It's about cancer. Cancer. And the suppression of cancer cures by Big Pharma. We know about cancer acts in the UK. We know about the responsibilities of broadcasters here in the UK. You can't claim or allow anybody to claim that there is a cure for cancer. Get into all sorts of trouble if you do that. So we're going to talk to Charles Pixley in hour two. Don't miss him. Lots and lots to get through today. I think we'll be able to join Jim now. Jim, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Oh, Richie, my friend, I'm delighted to be back with you. So much going on out there. It's unreal.
Unreal. Thanks for doing it today. Senators will not vote against US President Donald Trump today. You've been talking about and writing about your belief that this impeachment ordeal, it's an ordeal for the public, I think, more than anybody else, is a nonsense, and that there are many things, or there are some things, which Trump could be impeached for if somebody really wanted to do him in. I'm fascinated by that. Over to you, Jim. What is it that Trump could be, hauled over the coals for? What else is there?
You're 100% correct, Richie. This impeachment by the Democrats is nothing but an extended campaign commercial. They have taken Representative from Texas Al Green's admonition to heart. If we don't impeach this guy, he will get reelected. Well, they have impeached him, and absent Google manipulation, which we've been warned about, he will get reelected. But as you observe, Richie, there are real issues over which Trump could, in fact, be impeached that even I would support, including, of course, the assassination of Qasem Soleimani in Iraq. He was on a peace mission. He was the second most influential political figure in Iran. He is Iran's leading general. Taking him out by a drone strike was an act of war. Now, under the UN Charter, one nation is entitled to commit a preemptive act of this kind only under two conditions. First, if they had approval of the UN Security Council, which obviously was not the case, Russia would never have approved. It's an absurd idea. Or second, if they were confronting an imminent threat and had to make an immediate response, which clearly wasn't the case here either, which means that the United States has violated the UN Charter, to which it's connected by a treaty. Now, Richie, under the U.S. Constitution, treaties have the same status under the law as the Constitution itself. So there is an impeachable offense right there.
Here's the $64 million question, my friend. Everything you said there is absolutely correct and present, as I'd expect from the likes of your good self. So why then, if the Democrats are so sick and tired of this man, if they're terrified of him winning again, why haven't they gone after him for the egregious crime of assassinating Qasem Soleimani? Why haven't they gone after him for that?
Well, they seem to have turned into the party of war, Richie. That one of the reasons they seem to be opposed to Trump, and for which he's been severely criticized in the press, have been his efforts to end the wars in the Middle East. Now, it's contradictory for him to be talking about starting a new one with Iran when he was in fact elected because he promised to get us out of the wars in the Middle East. But the only occasions on which the Democrats have described him as presidential and the mainstream media has applauded him is when he has undertaken an action like lobbing cruise missiles into a base in Syria because of a fabricated chemical attack. Then he got great praise. But Richie, there's another reason that in my mind is even more important. The sanctions on Iran are a form of collective punishment. That means the entire population is being punished for the actions of its political leaders. Those are proscribed under the Geneva Conventions and the UN Charter. That is, in my opinion, an even more egregious and more deserving article of impeachment that could be brought against the United States president.
Yeah, regime change. I hate to use the term regime change. The Iranians have got a government, for better or for worse. It's their government. We shouldn't be referring to them as regimes. The Venezuelans have a government. What he does, what Trump does, and of course Trump doesn't make these decisions, in my opinion, you might argue with me, he's a puppet. They try and starve people to the point where the people will then do their bidding and rise up against their leaders.
I think Trump is his own man domestically, but in terms of foreign policy, he seems to be a puppet of Bibi Netanyahu, Richie. I mean, look at what he's done. The idea of declaring Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel when it had to be part of the solution to this complex problem. The idea of declaring the Golan Heights belong to Israel when the world recognizes that to be Israeli-occupied Syrian territory. Unfunding the UN agency that provided refugee assistance to the Palestinians. Also extending the definition of anti-Semitism by means of an executive order here in the United States to include any criticism of the actions of Israel or the government of Israel. I mean, those are outrageous. And then, of course, this peace plan is anything but. This is giving Israel everything it could ever ask for. I have said on the air, and I repeat it here, I'd rather have a Jew who put America first than I would a non-Jew who put Israel first.
Does anybody, I mean, outside of the U.S. independent media, people like yourself, what does the ordinary man and woman really give a damn about the closeness of the Trump administration to the Israeli government? Do they care, Jim?
That's a great question, Richie, because I think by and large they're oblivious. They don't understand. The average American is having so much trouble keeping a roof over their head and food on their table. They take their news in sound bites. We know the media is a Zionist occupied vehicle for disinformation. I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, Richie, 100 executives from CNN, all of whom are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. I have another panel of 100 executives from NBC, all are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. I have a third panel from the New York Times, 100 executives of the New York Times, all of whom are dual U.S.-American citizens. It's appalling, Richie. They have been very, very clever in infiltrating the media and in dominating the Congress, where Cynthia McKinney, about a decade ago, revealed the pledge and how every new member of Congress is asked to take a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. And almost every single member of Congress complies.
Yeah, we have it here in the UK as well. The extent of the influence of the Israeli lobby is beyond the knowledge of most people. They just don't understand it. And, you know, it's got... It, of course, the repercussions are that Israel goes about its business. Its business being the torture, the imprisonment, the stealing of land, the demolition of houses on a daily basis, extrajudicial murder. And because of the extent of the influence of the Israeli lobby in this country, I don't think, in recent times anyway, any politician has dared to suggest the imposition of sanctions on Israel. And if any country is begging to be sanctioned back to the Stone Age because of what it does, it's the state of Israel. But the lobby is equally as successful here in what it does, Jim, as it is in the United States. Nobody wants to take it on for fear that they will be exiled, you know, and I don't mean exiled, kicked out of the country, but that their lives will basically be, they'll become non-existent, they'll become persona non grata and declared to be anti-Semitic, which is crazy, but that's where we are.
I know, Richie, they use anti-Semitism as a club. In fact, we had a former Israeli minister who was interviewed, as I recall, on German television, admitting it's a trick. She says the U.S., we call out anyone who's a critic of Israel as an anti-Semite, in Europe as a Holocaust denier, but she was admitting it's a purely a political stunt. What I would also observe is that Israel is sacrosanct, you know, immune from criticism. It's embarrassingly bad, and there's no justification for it. What I was most intrigued by with regard to the peace plan was Trump's declaration that there would be a contiguous border for the Palestinian state, which, of course, is very odd since Gaza and the West Bank are separated. They were creating the contiguous border by above-ground bridges and underground tunnels, Richie. I mean, what a farce.
What a farce is right. Jim Fetzer is our guest. Check out Moonrock Books to find out more about Jim. Live from Madison in Wisconsin. As I said earlier on, a die-in of critical thinking, academic, writer, researcher, and I've mentioned broadcaster already. On the Cynthia McKinney thing, I had this bombshell interview with Cynthia years ago, and she explained to me in great detail what had happened to her when she first became a congresswoman for Georgia. And you described it brilliantly. She told me about, basically, she hadn't even hung her coat up on her coat stand when the lobby was in the office asking her basically to sign the pledge, to pledge her support for the state of Israel. Meaning that, you know, you then, as a new congresswoman, would become very quiet on Israel. You wouldn't say anything about Israel, but your name would appear on literature, you know, claiming that you supported the state of Israel. And she said no. And it had, you know, catastrophic consequences for Cynthia McKinney. Early on, when she didn't sign the pledge, if I remember my conversation with her,
Cynthia was such a strong person and so well supported in her district that she was able to survive all of the adverse action taken against her to serve 6 or 8 terms in the House. Unlike, say, Dennis Kucinich, whom I regarded as the smartest member of Congress at the time, where if you don't sign the pledge, you either found yourself confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate next time around, or if a census had intervened in the meanwhile that your district had been redrawn and you no longer had a seat, Dennis Kucinich's district was redrawn. He no longer had a seat. I mean, this was a completely admirable guy, Richie, who got just right out.
I remember him, but that happened to Cynthia as well. Cynthia was a two-term congresswoman for Georgia, but she was the subject of a film called Blackout, because ultimately they did get her, and they got her using the tricks that you just described there to do for Dennis Kucinich. They did the same thing to her, basically. I remember her telling me that not long after she refused to sign the pledge, a dinner that was due to be held for Cynthia to help her raise funds, which was going to be hosted by Tipper Gore, was cancelled. And all of a sudden, people were walking away from Cynthia because of, you know, her refusal to sign the pledge. It's crazy. Let me ask you this, Jim, before we talk a little bit about Sandy Hook, because I know you've got news on Sandy Hook. Before we go there, on this whole area of Israel, what do you make of these four horsewomen, these Democratic congresswomen, Ocasio-Cortez and Tlaib?
What do they call themselves?
The four horsewomen. Yeah, the four horsewomen, I think they're called.
Well, actually, Richie, I like them a lot just because they introduce diverse perspectives and they're provocative and make us think about issues we might otherwise prefer to ignore. Actually, just a minor correction, Richie. Cynthia wound up serving six terms in the House of Representatives.
Was it six? Was it? It was six. Yeah, okay, I stand corrected.
She's such a wonderful person. But I like AOC, for example. I like Ilhan Omar. They're very controversial, but they're very outspoken. I like that, Richie. I like women who are strong and outspoken, even if I disagree with them. And, you know, because of this ridiculous impeachment trial, Bernie was tied up in the Senate, having to sit and listen to all the presentations. I believe that's one of the reasons why Nancy Pelosi wanted to manage the time frame for the impeachment trial. Remember, after they passed the articles of impeachment with a great urgency, she was emphasizing this was a threat to national security. It had to be done now.
Yeah.
She sat on them for a month. Now, I think two things were going on there, Richie. She wanted to have them only introduced in the Senate late enough that they could spill over past the State of the Union, which, of course, Trump gave last night and succeeded because the vote will take place today at about 4:00. But in addition, I believe she had her Hollywood allies organize the whole thing. If you watched, and I watched quite a lot of it, it was beautifully scripted. It was well written. They had all these visual images. That was a Hollywood production. My candidate for the director is Rob Reiner, where I believe that Robert De Niro threw in a few, you know, wicked points. But the whole thing, I thought, was just too slick a production. Pelosi, you know, last night extended her hand, which Trump declined to shake. And at the end, as he was concluding what has been politically very well received speech, where he didn't mention the impeachment once, she, with great theatricality, tore up the copy of the speech he had given to her. Trump has outdone her on the impeachment. I mean, his defense was actually superlative. His attorneys were so very good. But, the Democrats were just so eager to get something on Trump that they went forward with flimsy and poorly substantiated claims, where, in fact, as you may well know, Richie, there's a billboard in Times Square now that is running 24/7, Joe Biden boasting before the Council on Foreign Relations how he threatened to withhold $1 billion in foreign aid for Ukraine unless they fired the prosecutor who was looking into Burisma, where his son Biden had a position, and he gave them 6 hours to do it before he had to fly back to the United States. And then he turns to the crowd and says, "Son of a bitch, they did it. They fired the prosecutor." Well, that's a classic quid pro quo of the very kind they were falsely alleging Trump had committed. Biden had committed it. Not only that, Richie, but now new reports are coming out that Biden had numerous efforts helping his son Hunter get that position. He was promoting him from the White House, from his office as vice president. It's all very corrupt. I think this is one of the reasons why he appears to be coming in fourth in Iowa. I think that Nancy Pelosi wanted Bernie to be out of Iowa, be sitting in the Senate. That was the other motive. So Biden, who of course isn't a member of the Senate, could be actively campaigning. But for all that, it did him no good at all. Coming in fourth is even Chuck Todd, the liberal host of Meet the Press, said is catastrophic for Biden.
Yeah, this Mayor Buttigieg and all this, it's interesting. I want to ask you this. You and I have butted heads over this before. I'm going to set you up. I'm going to set you up for a bit of criticism. I don't know too many, you know, intellects like yours. You're as smart a guy that's ever been on this program. Very, very smart. Very well read. Eccentric, I think, which is a great thing. Incredibly bright. And yet, no matter what happens, I mean, I remember you supporting Donald Trump before the 2016 election. And I've been saying for at least 10 to 12 years, and I don't categorise myself, I don't put myself alongside you in terms of intellect, I don't. But I've known for a long time that it doesn't matter who sits on the throne, who holds the office of president or prime minister, it matters not a damn. And yet I get the impression from you, Trump turns out to be everything I thought he would be, disappointing you and others, and yet you still have some connection to the electoral system in your country. And that astonishes me, Jim, that you still believe that the way out of this is by finding the right man or right woman and getting them into the Oval Office and not, in fact, tearing down the entire apparatus itself. Am I right?
Well, bear in mind, Richie, of course, I mean, I have lived through a lot of American politics. I was born in 1940. And I voted twice for Bill Clinton. I voted twice for Barack Obama. And if you look at the alternatives they were running against, it's very easy to see why those were properly cast votes. When Donald Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, for me, it really wasn't a tough call. Along with many other Americans, Hillary, we know to be massively corrupt. She's a war hawk. If she, there was some absurd claim about Hillary, you know, promoting peace. On the contrary, if Hillary had been elected president, we would probably not be having this conversation because we would have been long since obliterated by a nuclear war. Her travesty in promoting the invasion of Libya, which may have been the most humane society ever realized on the face of Earth, her double treatment of Gaddafi, who was invited, he was not putting up a fight, but traveling in a convoy under a white flag of surrender to a location specified by the Department
hang
of State.
Hang on a second. Hang on a second, my great friend. This is a politician's. This is politician behavior from the great Jim Fetzer. We know this shit, Jim. You and I know this. We know that Hillary is evil. We could talk about child trafficking. We could talk about organ harvesting. Right. Forget about that for a minute. Why does a guy like you, why are you still, you know, tethered to this system that you believe that somewhere down the line there might be, no matter who stands, no matter who runs, they're all multi-millionaire men and women with connections to big pharma and big business. None of them are ever going to do anything other than that which the banksters want them to do. When are we going to understand that and tear the whole thing down, is what I'm asking.
Well, Richie, you're underestimating the differences between the parties that actually matter. Most importantly, vis-a-vis the judiciary. Trump has already made a couple of appointments to the Supreme Court, and it's highly probable that if he is reelected, he will make as many as two more. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is on her last legs. It's a miracle they can prop her up so she still appears to be alive when she's virtually a cadaver.
Right.
He has made appointment after appointment to the judicial system, the federal courts, something around 138 appointments or more, Richie. It's going to have an enduring influence, and I must say, I've come to appreciate the difference between judges who adhere to the rule of law and the Constitution and those who do not. When you mentioned my Sandy Hook case, I've been living through basically a lawless trial that was brought to punish me for speaking out about Sandy Hook, for bringing together 13 experts, including six current or retired PhDs, where we established a school had been closed by 2008, that there were no students there, that was done to promote gun control. Indeed, one of our other contributors, well-known himself, Paul Preston, though not a PhD, has supervised the drills like this himself as a school administrator, and who reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education in the wake of what was being broadcast from Newtown, which didn't add up to him, all of whom confirmed to him it had been a drill, that no students had been harmed, and it was done to promote gun control. Now, that was Barack Obama. That was Joe Biden. That was Eric Holder. I mean, that was a disgrace. They actually, Obama nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948 that precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that were being used without, by means of the Smith-Mundt Nullification Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. And we've since seen a barrage of additional staged events like the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland. You mentioned Moon Rock books, Richie.
Yeah, Boston,
well,
for sure, yeah.
I have edited 9 books for Moon Rock, bringing together experts to expose what really happened. Would you believe, of the total of 12 volumes we published now, Amazon has banned 6?
Yeah.
That can only mean because we're right over the target. This lawsuit was a classic slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation intended to punish those who violate the preferences of the deep state by exposing their corruption, the shams they're perpetrating, the frauds on the American people, and to set an example so that others won't follow in our wake. They will know. They'll be dragged into court, and it will last a long time.
I'll tell you
very
this much,
expensive.
Jim. I'll tell you this. You would be the first to admit that I've always been extremely, as I should be anyway, fair to you when it comes to Sandy Hook. I've always been open-minded, and I've always invited you on to have your say on that. And I've put the other side in the absence of the other side being on, and I have respect for it. And I do have respect for the qualifications of the men and women that have contributed to those volumes that were banned. And I'm more than happy to talk about this ongoing, because I know that in the coming weeks you're going to have more news about your own, you know, case with this, with Sandy Hook, and I'll be inviting you back on to talk about that. But in the 5 or 6 minutes that we have left, I want to press you on this notion. I mean, you spoke there about Trump appointing these judges, and you know, it's fairer than it was under Obama. But Jim, earlier on you said the man campaigned on the basis that wars of intervention would come to an end, that the US wouldn't be the world's policeman. He's turned into the biggest Zionist puppet that ever lived. He's pushing and harassing countries in the Middle East. You mentioned Syria earlier on, and the OPCW and the fake chemical attack, the Trump response to that, the efforts to drag Iran. Hang on, let me finish. The efforts to, you know, to get some sort of a protracted conflict with Iran. He's a psychopath, Jim. Not only is he that, but he's obviously a sex offender. There's about 5 or 6 dozen women, they can't all be lawyers, who are trying to bring cases against this guy for his behaviour over the years. He was intimately acquainted with the Clintons and with Jeffrey Epstein. Trump is as much of a scumbag and a gangster as Bush and Obama were before him, and Father Bush and all the rest of them. When are we going to figure out that we can't change the world by falling for the bullshit of people like Donald Trump, that we've got to move away from it?
Richie, Americans don't have the opportunity to revise their political system. We have a two-party system. We're always confronted with a choice between two evils.
Turn your back on it. Turn your back on it, Jim.
The lesser of two evils, Richie. You can opt out if you want and not vote at all. I choose to participate and fight for my country and for its best interests, even if some cases the difference is only incremental. I want to add, by the way, that this taking out of Soleimani, which led to a response by Iran, we have a Pentagon report released under Freedom of Information Act that showed that response was far more devastating than reported, that we had around 285 casualties, 135 dead, many airplanes, hangars were destroyed. What the Iranians have demonstrated is that their missiles, although not nuclear tipped, are nevertheless highly precise. And indeed, even the head of the Israeli Defense Force has now issued a warning to the citizens, the residents of Israel, that the next war is going to bring many casualties on the home front.
Yeah.
Because the Israeli defense against the missiles is the same defense the Americans had at the air base in Iraq, and it did not work. So this, I think, is causing a certain tempering of enthusiasm for going to war with Iran. Iran is a very strong nation, a peaceful nation, hasn't launched a war of aggression against any other state since 1775. And let me just add, for good measure, speaking of 1775, Richie, we have this bizarre event going on here in the United States where Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor, who's many times a billionaire of Donald Trump, estimated to be worth $55 billion, Donald merely $3 billion, is trying to buy his way into the election. He sought to take over the state legislatures in 16 states. He succeeded in 14. Virginia, most strikingly, is now loaded with anti-gun zealots who are threatening to confiscate weapons from every resident of Virginia, most of which is rural. The rural residents know they have to have weapons to defend themselves or they'll be at the mercy of urban gangs who come to rape, to loot, and to pillage.
Yeah.
It's a completely outrageous situation here with Michael Bloomberg, Richie.
Yeah.
And, of course, this situation in Iowa, what a fiasco. It turns out the app came from a company called Shadow that has many leftovers from Obama and Hillary. Who's going to benefit from trashing all this? So we don't know whether it's Bernie or Buttigieg, for example, who took the lead,
yeah.
Where it had to be Bernie. It had to be Bernie. When it's all said and done, Buttigieg will come in second, but they manipulated the situation to make it look as though he was the victor at present when not all the votes have yet been counted. Hillary is still playing a role behind the scenes. How could the Democrats now promote a rich white billionaire as their candidate when they're supposed to be the party of diversity, Richie? We're in a
Do you know what's the pressing, Jim? Mixed. Let me tell you what's depressing about that, and I'll give you the absolute final word, as I always do. You said to me there, a man of your intellect, you said, we vote for the lesser of two evils. We had this in the UK general election. Everybody knew that Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour Party leader, was utterly useless, worthless, another fake, a fake socialist, a fake liberal. But people thought, well, as useless as he is, life might be a little easier for a little while until the next lunatic or psychopath comes in. And, I mean, it's depressing for me to hear you say that. I choose between the lesser of two evils. Let me finish. I'm asking you a question. There is a question here, and I'll give you 2 minutes to answer it, and then we'll part company for today. But I will ask you to come back on in March to update me on your campaign, I suppose, is the better word for what you believe to be the truth about Sandy Hook to come out. So we will do that in March, guaranteed. But I want to ask you this question. What about non-compliance? What about, well, I'm not going to participate in a system where I'm given every 4 years two lunatics, two corporate-controlled banksters to choose from. I'm not going to comply with it. I'm not going to vote for either the pederast lawyer fraud that is Donald Trump or the child murdering lunatic that is Hillary Clinton. I'm not going to get involved in that. I'm going to practice non-violent civil disobedience. Why do we just accept that for the rest of our lives and days we get to choose between the lesser of two evils? Final word to you.
Well, Richie, you can opt out. And let me say, you're always eminently fair. I think you're a brilliant guy. I love coming on your show. Let me tell you why, you know, not only does it appear Trump is going to be reelected, absent manipulation by Google. Well, we had a recent testimony by Robert Epstein, who is the editor-in-chief of Psychology Today, testifying that Google manipulated its algorithm to give Hillary, this is back in 2016, between 2.6 and 10.4 million additional votes merely by sending a reminder to get out to vote only to Democrats. It doesn't cost them a dime, and it's invisible. He said in 30 years of his research in behavioral science, he's never seen such powerful effects. This is the threat. Now, with Trump, he's calling out the fake news media. That's a great benefit. He's standing up for the Second Amendment. That's also a great benefit. When I mentioned 1775, that's when the shot heard round the world occurred in Concord and Lexington. Why were the colonists upset? Why did they fire on the British? Because the British were coming to take the colonists' guns, Richie. Americans need guns to protect themselves. Otherwise, we create free fire zones. This is another problem for the Democrats. If you superimpose an electoral map over the gun violence map, the great proliferation of gun violence occurs in areas where Democrats have passed stringent gun control laws and citizens can't defend themselves. They are responsible. Anyone could look at Chicago and see it's a disaster. They have the most stringent gun control laws and the highest gun violence. More guns, amazingly enough, is the answer. He ought to pass a concealed carry pack, you know, permit authorization for the entire nation, and crime, violent crime, would be dramatically reduced. We have ample studies that support it, Richie. One final word. Bloomberg would be a petty tyrant. Bloomberg is not only trying to buy up these legislatures to promote his pro-gun agenda, which is disastrously misconceived, but he was behind Stop and Frisk, abusing minorities in New York. He even goes so far as to deny us the right to drink a big Slurpee. He would be a disaster. And the idea that the Democrats may be gravitating toward Michael Bloomberg just shows the poverty and disarray of a once great party I used to respect and support.
Great to have you back, Jim. Thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate that. Moonrock Books is where you'll find Jim. I'll put a link out to it. I know you know who Jim Fetzer is. You don't need me to tell you, but I will put links out on Twitter and on Facebook. Always a pleasure. Come back next month and we'll spend a bit more time talking about Sandy Hook. You know, you're always welcome to do that here. Cheers, Jim.
You got it, Richie. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Jim Fetzer live on the line to us there from Madison, Wisconsin. Wednesday's programme, February 5th. And hugely interested in that. You know, choosing between the lesser of two evils. Is that it? Is that your lot in life, is it? Every 4 years you go to the polls, you have two lunatics, two stooges for corporations and for banks, and you say, well, which of them is less of a psychopath? Okay, well, I'll vote for that one then. Or do you do something else? 3 minutes it is past the hour. Right, I think we need to get some headlines, do we? No, we're not going to do headlines. We're not going to do headlines. We're going to do this. Back in a couple of minutes, Charles Pixley will be live on the radio show in around about 2 minutes' time. You don't want to miss him. And it's a nice follow-up. It was a great lead-in to what we're going to talk about today. Part of my conversation last night with Dr. Amanda D. Vollmer. We talked about cancer. We're going to talk about cancer cures and what the consequences are, can be, and were for Charles Pixley when he talked about a cure for cancer some years ago. Plenty to come on the Richie Allen Radio Show for Wednesday, back in a couple of minutes' time.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester, this is your Richie Allen Radio Show. This is Morrissey, back with Charlie Pixley in 3 minutes' time. Yeah, Manchester's finest, Morrissey, and the more you ignore me, the closer I get, from Vauxhall and I. That's the album. Coming up for 9 minutes past the hour. Very serious stuff, this. I've been doing independent radio, having left commercial and national media some years ago. I've been doing independent radio now since, I don't know, 2009 maybe, 2008. And cancer always comes up. It's important. Statistics come out all the time. I think the most recent statistics I read were that one in two of us will be diagnosed with some form of cancer in our lives. What an amazing thing that is. And with the development of technologies like fifth generation mobile technology, if you believe people like Chris Busby, why wouldn't you? A genius when it comes to non-ionizing radiation. More of us are going to get cancer in the near future. Maybe it won't be one in two. Maybe it'll be two and three maybe in the coming years. We have a thing in the UK called the Cancer Act of 1939. One of the provisions of the 1939 Cancer Act is that you can't make any claims around cancer cures. You can't speak about it. You can't go on television or radio and say, I think that this product works and cures cancer. You could be prosecuted for it. And a number of people have been prosecuted in the UK for doing that very thing. I want to introduce you to my guest this hour. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. His name is Charles Pixley. And he's the man responsible for a book called Do No Harm. And it's about 714X, 714X. He wrote a book, he compiled a book in the 1990s because he believed that there was tacit evidence. There was more than tacit evidence. There was serious evidence that this 714X, 714X, was successful in treating cancer. In fact, it was approved in Canada in the late 1980s before it was blocked in the United States of America. Charles is a Vietnam veteran, wrote this book, compiled it, spoke to many, many people, spoke to people who had treated themselves or been treated with 714X, only to find that the book was banned. And later on, he was sent to prison himself for advocating for 714X and for distributing it. And this is important stuff, right? That's why we do these programs, because we like to talk about these things and investigate them. Let's welcome to the program, live on the line, Charles Pixley. Charles, thanks so much for coming on, and thanks for your patience earlier in the week. We were supposed to do this on Monday, but it fell apart on Monday. I'm grateful to have you on the program today. How are you?
Absolutely my honor, and I'm grateful to be on such a wonderful show and reach so many people. This is vital, in fact and indeed.
It's as relevant now as it was back in the 1990s. There's no doubt about that. Do you want to tell our listeners, and you can take as much time as you need to tell them, how did you come to find yourself in prison with a book being banned, talking about cancer? Give us the backstory to how that happened, Charles.
Well, in 1990, I'm an entrepreneur, and one of my most successful ventures was this particular venture we're talking about today. And I had visited a friend in Woodstock, New York. I had just come out of bankruptcy and we were struggling. I had five kids at the time in the house and, you know how it goes.
Yeah.
And things were hard. And with lots of prayer and also supplication for my stupidities of the past, I came across this book in Woodstock on July 4th called Oxygen Therapies by Ed McCabe. And Ed McCabe is a very famous speaker and author. They call him Mr. Oxygen. You can find him on the web. And in his book, Oxygen Therapies, he discussed how you can cure cancer with oxygen. And that to me was, it set off a, it was like a lightning bolt. I had no idea there was such a thing as a cure for cancer. And this was, I was in my 40s at the time. And so, and I had purchased a company for a dollar called Writers and Research Incorporated. And the lightning bolt, everything came together finally. The prayer was answered. So I contacted Ed and I said, I'll make a deal with you. I'll put you on the radio as a publicist, and I'll buy your book wholesale and sell it retail. And I had my paradigm, if you will, is a circle of energy. The radio show benefits, the listeners benefit, the publisher benefits, the author benefits, and we benefit. So everybody benefits in the circle. And so I started booking him on radio, and it was an instant success. And by the beginning of the next year came George Bush, the Poppy Bush, Gulf War, and Major General Perry Smith was the spokesman on CNN in those days. And he wrote a book. He's also a PhD. And he wrote a book, a business book. So I saw an opportunity. I hadn't really fully cognized this discovery that we're going to talk about in a minute. And I had him booked on two major shows, Dr. Schuller's Hour of Power and the 700 Club. And we sold on those two shows maybe 40 to 60,000 copies on each show within 10 minutes. So that was like, oh my God, we went from nothing to flush $250,000 in revenue the very first year. So then somebody came up to me and said, well, if you're doing that for all these authors, you should do it for this guy. And they handed me a book called The Persecution. It was called Galileo of the Microscope at the time. It was about a scientist, Gaston Naisson, who came from Lyon, France. He created a microscope that in today's money would be probably $5 million value in today's values. And in that microscope, he explored and expanded upon Antoine Bechamp. Yesterday you had Amanda Vollmer on, and Dr. Vollmer was talking about Bechamp and Pasteur. And what Bechamp, and before him Emile Dalyan, discovered that is in our blood, there is a life force that's called a somatite or tiny body. And that tiny body has a multi-stage life cycle. And furthermore, it's indestructible. And it has a 16-stage life cycle if a person is going into a degenerative stage. Now, I don't know if you can show the attachments I sent to you here on, if I can show it or not, I'm going to try.
Yeah, we're radio now, so I can't do anything like that. But I can link later on to where people can see the documents that you've sent me. But as it is in TV, I can't do it now.
Okay, fine. So this the 3-stage life cycle in the somatide in a healthy body is observable under his microscope, and it's replicated every time. It's truly scientific, where it's absolute. It's not conjecture. And then you can track through the changes in this life cycle of the somatide the advance or degeneration or regeneration of a person's Bechamp and Naisson called the milieu or the whole. So the terrain of the body. And he saw very clearly that when he's going into cancer, you can say to them up to 2 years before it actually occurs, you're going to have cancer. But when they have cancer or they've been diagnosed with cancer, it's evident in the blood or it's not. So in other words, it can confirm or deny whether somebody has the cancer. But in fact, when they have it, it's clearly evident in the blood and the pictures show it clearly. From there, he created a medicine. A homeopathic medicine, by the way, called 714X. He labeled it 714X. It's nothing mystical. He just chose the seventh letter of the alphabet, which is G for Gaston, 14th letter N for Naisson, and the X is the year of birth, 1924. So there's nothing more than that. But the medicine is a for anybody who understands homeopathy, it's a 3C dilution of camphor and a more than a 200C dilution of one molecule of nitrogen, one molecule of ammonium in a saline solution. This, the miracle, the astounding miracle, and the reason I say that this is both, should be the foundation of all cancer therapy, or all regenerative therapy for that matter, but cancer in particular, should be the founding, the cornerstone, is because all cancer, and this you can ask any oncologist about this, all cancer secretes a hormone that blocks the immune system. So when a person has cancer, quite literally, the body's immune system is doesn't know that. It can't see that. And this medicine unlocks that, it shuts off that signal, and the body's immune system then attacks the cancer, wipes it out, and you pass it out through your normal excretion, physical excretions. So we're...
Well, we've lost Charles momentarily there. Charles, we just lost you momentarily there. I apologize for that. You've gone completely there. Let's just hang up and reconnect there and get him back on. This is fascinating. I'm going to sum up in about 15, 20 seconds what Gaston Naissance, the Frenchman who went to Quebec, what it is that he believes he discovered. So we'll sum that up because it is very interesting, this. We've got Charles Pixley live on the line, who was sent to prison and had a book banned in the 1990s for writing about this discovery by this French scientist, okay, who was initially basically ran out of France, was prosecuted for practicing medicine without a license in France, and then went to Quebec, and he put forward this theory that all of us have got living organisms in our blood called somatids, living organisms that are vital in our bloodstream, in our blood, vital for life, okay? And that through observing these somatides, you can basically see cancer. And you can see the onset of cancer very early. And it was on the basis of that that Gaston Naissance developed what we know as 714X, which is a treatment for that, and which Charles Pixley believes basically eliminates cancer in the body. That's what we're talking about here. And I hope we can get him back because it's fascinating, this. Charles Pixley on the Richie Allen radio show, 21 minutes past the hour. He's disappeared completely there. I think he might have gone down. He might have, his computer might have crashed or something, because I can't get him back on. And it's telling me for the moment that he's offline, which will be a real bloody shame because we were just getting into it there. I expect there to be a lot of questions and comments, by the way. Right, Charles, you're back. You're back. Now, by the way, I would suggest to you that you turn your camera off. It might help with the bandwidth. I can see you and you can't see me. It's just because it is radio. And as good-looking a guy as you are, Charlie, I don't need to see you today. Right, now, I was doing a very brief summing up there. Let me do it again. You've introduced me to the concept of somatoids or somatids, which are very, very, very tiny organisms in the blood which can only be observed under a microscope, and they are necessary for life. And that Gaston Naissance basically diagnosed these, and he linked them to, well he used them to in a way that he was able to determine that cancer was present in the body or would be present. And we've lost Charles again there. Very poor connection we have, Charles, at the moment. I don't know what we can do about that. Charles, I've got your landline. Should I call that? I think I will. I think I'll call your landline and be done with it. I think we'll do that, because otherwise we could be here all day long. Right? Can we get him back? No, it's not happening. All right. Oh, the best laid plans. Hang on. I'm going to try and get him on the landline and hope that works. Okay. Charles, you're back.
I guess the censors really don't want us to talk about this today, do they?
Well, look, first of all, I do agree that there are people who don't want us to talk about this. I agree with that, but I think it might be a connectivity. It might just be a basic connectivity issue. I was basically just summing up. If we go down again, I'm going to call your landline. I was basically summing up there that Gaston Naissance, he prescribed the presence of somatides in the blood, and he linked problems with our somatides to the presence of cancer. And through that, he basically came up with 714X. Now, I must point out, and you know the program you're on, you know who I am, so you know I'm a good guy, I'm a nice guy, but I've got to point out that, you know, if you go looking for Gaston Naissance online, you will find a lot of material, again, through Google, it must be said, that will tell you that he was basically convicted in France for practicing medicine without a license, and that he moved from France to Quebec. So the French would tell you that this man is a fraud. That's what they will tell you. And I've got to acknowledge that. I've got to acknowledge that because there will be listeners, skeptics, who will say, hang on, Richie, this guy is a fraud. Now, I know you don't believe he is. So he prescribed somatides and developed 714X, and that's where we were before we went down. So tell me more.
Right, so this is the standard in the industry. When you hear somebody talk about XYZ theory, they call it a conspiracy theory. This was the CIA invented this to shut off your mind for those who aren't capable of logical thought. And same with the medical industry back in the 30s in Rockefeller's era. Abe Flexner and some of his compatriots came up with quack. So for all intents and purposes, that would be considered a quack and a fraud. And I've lived it for 30 years. And really, if that's what you think, you've got a problem. I don't have a problem.
Fair enough. But listen, you know whose program you're on. I'm pointing out that this stuff is out there. Because my listeners will say to me later on, Richie, you had a really nice chat with Charles and you gave him loads of time, which of course I will. I let my listeners make their own minds up. I don't tell them what to think. But if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, that if you go to Wikipedia tells you that 714X hasn't been trialed anywhere.
And that's nonsense. I know this is...
No, I know, and that's why you're here. You're here to counter this.
I'll give you the best example. I'm sure you have it in Europe. We certainly have it all over the world, and that is you can have the tie a ribbon on for a cure, run for a cure, wear pink shoes for a cure, baseball, soccer, rugby for a cure, whatever. But if you tell somebody you've got a cure, oh my God, then they come at you. So I read your the Cancer Act of 1939, and by the way, it is not active in Northern Ireland for some reason. And also, if you are found guilty of talking advertising, we're not advertising; we're educating. And second of all, if they accuse you of that, you get the chance to defend yourself.
Yeah,
but the fine is £50, and the second time is £100 in 3 months, possibly 3 months in jail. So then it goes on to describe that if this publication, which we put together, I put together, called Do No Harm, this was originally created to serve the law, which is Title 21, Part 56 in the United States, which is called informed consent, and was passed on to the FDA in total and in part, and they had complete understanding and complete access to everything about this medicine, including the trials. We were the official, we were conducting the trial, if you will, but the homeopathic does not require a trial, but we were doing it according to the book and according to the law. And because I became very aggressive, I was on radio in those days, and I'm sure you'll remember, before Clinton changed the law, there was probably 2,000 plus or minus owners of major media radio programs, and I don't know how many on TV. I didn't focus on TV. I focused on radio because it's a voracious market. To me, it's the best communication device in the world.
No doubt.
In those days, it was easy to get a hold of a producer if it was in the genre of the week of what they're talking about. Like this week with you, you've been extremely competent in covering with John Rappaport. I met John Rappaport in Amsterdam in 1991. We were fighting against AZT for AIDS and so forth. So, and Luc Montagnier was there, one of the monsters of that industry. So the radio industry was very gracious, and they had, because I was booking others, and then after I learned all about Nason and Chris Bird's book and really dug into it and then found Dr. Schildbecher, and we formed an institutional review board under the law of Congress to make this available to the American public under informed consent, and then really get the word out and help as many people as we could. Within a very short period of time, we had over 50,000 terminal patients in a very short period of time, to include Congressman Berkeley Bedell, who was dying of cancer, and Dr. Schildwechter, our chief investigator, helped him, and he overcame his cancer. And thereafter, he and Dr. Schildwechter went before Congress and testified to the same, and within a month, they blocked the access to the Americans for this medicine.
Now, this is very important. Let's hold that thought. This is very important. I want you to say that again. Slow down and say that again, because it's true, and it's very interesting, and people should know this.
You can tell I got fired up. Now I'm
good. You know, good, and we have plenty of time to talk about this. So a member of Congress was given time to get his affairs in order. He was told your time is up.
He was terminal,
and he was treated with 714X.
Correct.
And overcame his cancer. He went to Congress and testified about this.
Correct, in June of 92.
In June of 92. This had been approved in Canada 3 years earlier, in 1989.
Let's stop right there for 1 second, because you brought this up in the intro. Nason was brought on trial in Canada in the 80s.
Yeah.
They threw him out of France. He went to Corsica. Corsican is a, what do you call it, of France. It's a subsidiary or whatever. And so that didn't work. And a man by the name of Mr. McDonald, I think it is, who owned the McDonald Stewart tobacco concern in Canada, brought him up to the Montreal and got him installed in the University of Montreal. And once they saw what Nason was doing and how successful he was, they booted him out of there, and he moved to further out east in Quebec to Rock Forest. And then that wasn't enough. They ramped up a charge that he of murder, because some patient died. I mean, whoever heard of a cancer patient dying, of course. So that they took him to trial, and that was Chris Bird's final focus of his book called Galilee of the Microscope, which was then renamed The Persecution and Trial of Gaston Nason. It's still available. You can find it on Amazon or wherever. Anyway, so he won his trial, and as a result of winning his trial, the Canadian government approved the medicine, but because Big Pharma basically controls everything, I think they're more powerful and more dangerous even than the military-industrial complex, they made it so that you could have the medicine in Canada through the same, Canada and England, Europe have the same medical authority, I think it's called the I forget what it's called in Canada, but they have the same medical authority where it's free, so to speak. And in order to get it in Canada, A, you have to be terminal. They've had to use every conceivable attempt through chemo and radiation. And then the doctor has to prescribe it. So A, it requires the knowledge that it exists, and B, the doctor willingness. And by then you're gorked out and have nothing left to fight with. So
I was just going to make that point. If you've gone through the various rounds of chemotherapy, and then the doctor says, we can't do any more, your body is in a very bad state from the chemo anyway, which might make it difficult for any other remedy to work, you know, in that instance. And that's a very interesting thing. You're absolutely right to mention, it's very important that Nason was tried as an accessory to murder, but was acquitted. And then the medicine 714X was approved in Canada. Again, I've done my research into this. Everything you've told me is true. I commend you for that. It was approved, and it was approved on the conditions that you just outlined, that everything that everything else had been tried before. This is fascinating. We've got Charles Pixley on the line. He's written a book called Do No Harm. The book was banned, and Charles was put in prison for it. We'll talk about that in a few minutes' time. We're talking about a remedy or a medicine made up of camphor and nitrogen, ammonium salt, sodium chloride and ethanol. Charles is convinced that it has been hugely successful in treating people with cancer. It's typically either inhaled using a nebulizer device or injected into the lymphatic system. That's how it would be administered. It can't be harmful at all. It can't be. That's a fact. but many people, including Charles Pixley, believe that it has had unqualified, unprecedented success in dealing with cancers. And this is hugely important. Now, you talk to me about why you became such a proponent of it, Charles. You must have seen it in action. I mean, you must have had enough evidence that it was working in order for you to commit yourself so wholeheartedly to it.
Well, that's just true. I mean, it's not a matter of belief anymore. It's a matter of knowledge. I know for a fact that it works. And to go back to the blood test that we were talking about, what Nason developed, there was an additional blood test created by Dr. Schilvechter on a chemical basis. They both took 20 years to develop it, but they didn't know each other. So it was happening simultaneous. But the point is that in both cases, they can pre-diagnose cancer 2 years before it happens. And when treated with 714X at that stage, a person doesn't develop the cancer. So the threat that we posed was that if you can pre-diagnose cancer, if everybody went in for a test and found out they're going to have cancer within a year or 2 years and were treated at that stage, what would that do to the multi-trillion dollar industry? So there's your threat. So yes, I've seen numerous times, I've used it myself. Just so you know that anything I discuss, I use it myself first so that I know what I'm talking about. I could give you story upon story of people who've come from death's door and are still with us today, or unfortunately, most of the time, by the time they hear this, they've already gone through the whole, they've been told there's nothing more, there's no hope. And as Dr. Vollmer said yesterday, there's a psychological factor. As soon as the doctor sees you have cancer, what's the first thing he tells you? You're going to die. You got to get in right away. You've got to have chemo and radiation, blah, 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 blah. It's always the same story.
They give you a prognosis, so then they say, well, 6 or 8 months, and maybe if we treat it aggressively, you might get 2 years. So tell me a little bit more about 714X and how it was marketed. This isn't a sneaky question or an obtuse question. I'm asking this genuinely. How expensive was it? I mean, back in the 1990s, how much were people paying to get 714X?
It hasn't changed much. I mean, the marketing part, I mean, that was my strength. I'm not a doctor. I've spent 40 years studying the healing arts, and I've trained by the best professional professors. So I have a strong love and understanding, but I'm not a physician, so people know that. But I have the knowledge that they have. And knowledge is knowable, by the way. And the reason we're having so much trouble is people just don't know. So the key point of this whole thing is the book is there. There's other books out there. There's other remedies out there that we can discuss. You have to become strong in your knowledge so that you can stand up for yourself and push back on these things. But so to answer your question, 714X is both non-toxic and inexpensive. For 1 3-week it's a 3-week cycle. It's 21 days on, 3 days off, 21 days on, 3 days off. And depending on the severity of the cancer, may last as long as 2 years. Some cancers are just really, really bad, like pancreatic cancer. So the cost at that time was $300 for 3 weeks. We also use proteolytic enzymes, which Dr. Vollmer talked about also, and Nick Gonzalez of New York City, who is no longer with us. He was very successful in treating. And this, the enzyme therapies goes back to Germany until 1930s. So Dr. Schilvechter developed a protocol for the 714X and the enzymes. And let's just say 1 year might cost, over a period of a year, not out of your pocket today, but over a period of a year, it might cost you $10,000 to $12,000.
A lot of money, Charles.
$500 to $1,000 a month, depending on the severity and what you're dealing with.
Most people couldn't afford that. That's very expensive.
Well, it's expensive when you consider they've taken all your money in an insurance plan or through taxes and left you without anything. But if you look at it, if a person has a will to live, you spend more than $12,000 on a car. You know, you go out, $1,000 a month is cheap to survive because it's doable. Or even $500 a month. Where there's a will, there's a way. And most people, we had a lot of people came to us and it was too late. They've been charged with medical bills in the millions, which is unfathomable to me. But the average cancer cost in this country, and I believe, I don't know what it is in Europe, but it would take me an hour to figure it out. But the average cost of cancer in the United States runs in the neighborhood of an average of 160,000 per person per cancer, but more cases than not, it's in the millions.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah, I'll give you that. It's extraordinarily expensive if you live in a country that doesn't have free healthcare at the point of necessity. I will give you that.
Free to whom? You know, you're limited to when in your system, in the European system, in the Canadian system, it's free. But what is it you get for free? You have an access to chemo and radiation. Now, granted, emergency care, we have the best in the world. God forbid you have a car accident, I want them, the allopathic world. But when it comes to degenerative care, chronic care, we're kindergarten still, where it's death for profit. And I don't mean that as, that is a pejorative. I do mean this is a death for profit society. So if you look at some of the agendas that are out there, but just in cancer alone, I analyzed it before I did the last radio show. And in this country, the statistics from the NIH, and you can look them up, they tell you that there's approximately 1.7 million people who contract cancer. But if you dig a little deeper and look at the cancer per gradient, such as white people, black people, Latinos who are not black, Latinos who are black, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Asians, and you look across the board and add up the statistics that way, it comes to about 4.6 million people per year in this country alone. And if you analyze it further and just be very generous at $100,000 per person, you're looking at $3 trillion just and 30 million people just since they put me in jail in 1996.
It's an industry.
30 million.
It turns over an unbelievable amount of money every
unbelievable.
Year.
Unbelievable. If you extrapolate that to the world.
And the fact is, and nobody can dispute this, is that more than 8 times out of 10, if you're getting radiotherapy, you're not going to survive in the long term. In the medium to long term, you're going to die. This is a fact. We know this. It's an undisputed fact. It destroys every good cell in the body. It destroys your natural immune system. It fries your brain. It's a terrible thing. And yet, as we pointed out earlier on, the Cancer Act here, officially, radiotherapy is the treatment that oncologists are supposed to use. There shouldn't be any discussion of anything else. I'm not in any danger discussing this with you tonight. I'm fascinated because I believe you're sincere. I believe that you believe that 714X has been successful, has worked. I don't know if it has. I can't endorse it, but I know that you believe it. How did you end up in prison? I mean, this is a country that prides itself on the First Amendment. I get this all the time from Americans. Yeah. Oh, Richie, you think you're a smart guy. You can't say this. In America, we can say anything. I can publish a book. I can say what I want. How do you end up in prison for writing about and recommending this particular treatment? How did that happen?
Well, because when I first heard about it, and in this country, when you serve your country in the military, you take an oath. And I take oaths very seriously. I've only taken two in my life. One was with Dr. Schildwechter, Hippocratic Oath under the laws of treating somebody in health. But the first oath I ever took, not counting the oath to God, was to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And when I saw this, I saw very clearly that there is a domestic enemy that is the most insidious enemy that we've ever faced. And there's an epic betrayal that's been going on for 100 years that was started by Rockefeller and Carnegie. And it's still going on today. And then when we came up with this healthcare plan that wants to mimic or mirror what they've done everywhere else in Canada and in Europe, then what I see there is medical control over your life and telling you what you can and cannot have. So being outspoken, and when I was in my 40s, I had a whole lot more fire than I have now. I was not as kind and as empathetic as I was. And I would just get really, really intense, where maybe I'm a little bit intense today because I'm excited, but I'm not as threatening today where before I was. And this book covers from the sublime to the most scientific. This book will address to anybody of any strata of education. So we made it very, very successful in getting on the air. And for one, we'll give you an example. In 1992, 2. I was on WKABC in Los Angeles on a 5-minute drive time where it's, you know, punk radio. They're just making jokes and get entertaining people in the morning. They don't really care about much of anything except keeping people entertained. And I was on there for 5 minutes. We got 3,000 phone calls for people who were terminal, wanted in more information. And that's how it was then. And at the time, you can see how the indoctrination is set in. The people would call and say, well, if this is so good, why doesn't everybody know? What? That means to me that if you didn't see it on a cartoon show this morning, that it can't be true. And within a year of that kind of discussion, people would come back to me and say, it's all about money. And even today, most people now know that it's stacked against them, but they don't have the strength of knowledge to leap over and do something about it. Well, as you said, it's expensive. Well, compared to what? So
I wasn't, I wasn't trying to be,
I didn't take it wrong. I'm just saying, people will think. I get that all the time.
Yeah.
And the other point is, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So you either think I'm totally insane, because I already went to prison for it. I stayed silent for 22 years. And then when President Trump came out with the Right to Try Act, which mimics, which basically says if you've been told you're terminal, you have the right to try an unapproved new drug. So, okay, although that the pharmaceutical industry means one of our new drugs, which is still the same as it always has been, it implies to me that he can try this too. So we got very successful. I testified before Congress after Dr. Schillbechter and Congressman Bedell. And by the way, if you read the material, I don't have it immediately in front of me. It's hard to page through and get things really quick. But there was ministers of health and there was diplomats and other people that were. There's a list of testimonials as long as your leg. Billy Best in the early 1990s, a kid 17 years old, ran away from home to avoid chemotherapy after one dose of chemo at Dana-Farber in Boston. He ran away from home and made national news. He was on Good Morning America, and he didn't want to come back because he didn't want to kill him. And in this country, if you have a child, God forbid, you have a 4-year-old or any year old, anything under the age of majority, and they have cancer, and you say, I'm not going to allow you to have chemo and radiation, they will take the child away from you and force it on them and kill them anyway. So Billy ran away from home, and this presented this problem. So I tracked him down somehow. I went over to Canada and brought the medicine in and got it to Billy. And Billy is still alive today. This was in, 28 years almost. And he wrote a book about it. You can find that on the line. So that was the crack that I opened for myself. Well, I didn't realize it at the time. But so we testified before the health conference when they were still forming legislation for what would become the Obamacare, because it was Kennedy, Waxman, Jay Rockefeller. And Jay Rockefeller in 1991 said, you're going to get health care reform whether you want it or not, talking to Americans.
Yeah.
And of course, I was enraged the whole time. I was just a ball of fire. I mean, you couldn't put out the fire. I was just awake. I was sleeping 2 hours a day, regardless of how much whiskey I drank. You know, it was just, oh my God. It was just, and people were calling at all hours of the day, wake me up in the middle of the night and have the same, they'd be calling from Europe or wherever. We had the Sultan of Brunei. We had movie stars. We had the highest and lowest strata of people from all over the world. So we made a big splash, and the FDA was fully informed of what we were doing because we told them so. We wanted to do it above board. And I met with both Governor Cuomo of New York, the original Governor Cuomo, and Governor Wilson in California staff. And I testified before Congress when they were forming this healthcare reform under what they called at that time managed care. And I said, excuse me, your honors, if you manage care by definition is antitrust, it's a forming of a monopoly. Well, within a week, maybe 2 weeks, the FDA showed up at my door and they brought in, I don't know, 8-10 agents that were off duty Secret Service. They took all the files and they took everything. They didn't do it at gunpoint because I don't have a gun, but I have a big mouth. And the whole time they were there, they just got thundered on, of course. And that began it. Now, I was called to Rockville, Maryland after that. And the FDA, the head of the FDA Institutional Review Board section called me down there. And he said, if they said to me point blank, word for word, if you don't stop doing what you're doing, we're going to find you guilty and put you in jail. And I had two of my teenage daughters there with me as witnesses. And because of my impetuosity and rage, I basically told them to go F themselves. I literally told them, go F yourself. You're killing people. You know you are. I'm not doing anything wrong. We're saving lives. I'm not stopping. So I'm sure that by itself, had I had the kind of money and support that some of these, like President Trump has, where he would have three or four attorneys appear on my case and defend me before I needed defense, I didn't have that. I didn't have the wisdom either, and I admit it. So, and a big mouth.
There's no harm in having a big mouth. Just a quick summing up, we've got about 10 minutes left today. Because I want to ask about the book, because the book is available. Yeah. And I'll
cover it real fast. I'll get you right to the point.
Absolutely. So, go ahead. Listen, just before you do, I want to remind our listeners, Charles Pixley is on the line. And he made headlines 20-plus years ago when he was sent to prison for advocating 714X as a treatment for cancer, based on research done by Gaston Naissance of France, who was the first person to talk about somatids in the blood, a life form which is in the blood which hadn't been recognised before, which was causing harm, and you could predict cancer in people by observing this in the blood under a microscope. They had a way of prescribing this, and out of that came 714X, the treatment which I mentioned, camphor, nitrogen, ammonium, ethanol and sodium chloride. And it's an amazing story, really, that we've heard Charles talking about how congressmen, well, a particular congressman diagnosed with terminal cancer, had the treatment, went into remission, life saved, testified before Congress. Naissance was basically accused of being an accessory to murder in Canada, in Quebec. He was acquitted of all of those charges. And in Canada, they then allowed the treatment by basically saying, if all else fails, you can use this treatment. It's a very important story, I believe. Charles went to prison for it. He believes, he's a Christian man, he says, he believes passionately in this treatment, and he's advocating it today. You can't talk about these things today, not on UK television and radio anyway. There is a huge pushback by big pharmaceutical companies, not only in the US, but around the world, trying to prevent people talking about alternative remedies for cancer. Let's talk about the book that was banned, because I know a lot of our listeners will want to read it. It's called Do No Harm, 714X Defying a Hopeless Prognosis. Tell us about it, Charles.
All right. So to summarize, I know they're going to take me to court. They're going to put me in jail. They're going to try to, right? So I had a friend who introduced me to the Assistant Secretary of Health, the boss of David Kessler, underneath Donna Shalala, Secretary of Health. And we applied for a waiver, which bypassed all these rules and regulations, which you really didn't need, but hey, take whatever you can get. And he granted it. So now we're going to court. I was indicted on 19 counts of alleged importation of an unapproved new drug, which was where I opened the door with Billy Best. And we went to court, and there was maybe 1,000 people had petitioned for treatment with the medicine that we worked with, that we could provide evidence of. We had a stack of letters 3 inches high that was submitted to the judge testifying that this was, that I was doing the right thing. And the first day of the trial, I was winning. It was clear to everybody I was winning. That next day, the judge was called to Washington and had a private meeting with President Clinton and Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who has since died of cancer. So he had a private meeting with the President of the United States and the Chief Justice. And when he walked in the room on the next day, it was written all over his face. I was already convicted. I could see it. It was coming. And sure enough, by the end of the session, it was over. And they found me guilty. And they wanted to put me away for 19 years. We were compelled by law to appeal. We appealed at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. And at exactly the same time that they were arguing, Dr. Kevorkian and the West Coast and the doctor from my own hometown, coincidentally, on the East Coast was applying for doctor-assisted suicide, for the right to doctor-assisted suicide, which they do anyway, but they wanted to have the authority to do it. And so we applied for, well, if you have a right to doctor-assisted suicide, you must also have the concomitant right to save your life through any means available. And the courts, when they finally came back with a decision, they said, we're not going to identify any new fundamental rights. And if you understand legal speak, that means you already have that right, and we're not going to uphold it, and you're going to jail. So that was that, and off I went. So the this book, if you'd like to read it, and I highly encourage anybody to become educated, it's harmless714x.com. You can download it instantly. And there you have it. So please ask questions.
It's some story. A great friend of mine who's very helpful to me, very famous actress, Jean Ann Crowley, she says this will make some screenplay, this story. And no, she's question. Right. It's an incredible, of course, means it's not believable. I believe you. I believe in your sincerity. I don't know if it works, 714X, because I've had no experience of it. But I believe that you believe it. And I believe you are passionately committed to it. You've gone through the mill, as it were, in the last 20, 25 years. And I suppose here we are now in 2020. If somebody listening to this program is either battling cancer or knows somebody who is, and they want to destroy this, because you mentioned Donald Trump and the change of the law in the United States, What do people need to do? Do they need to get in touch with you?
Well, when we were quote unquote in business, we demanded informed consent. This book was put together by law for people to read it so that they could give fully informed. There was no excuse, whether it be scientific, legal, and every level, they were able to discern whether they wanted to use it or not, and they would submit their consent form, and then we would facilitate them receiving the medicine. Now, I don't touch the medicine. I don't touch the enzymes. I just educate, and that's it. So they would call directly to, they put in a call, and they would have it sent to them directly. Just to give you an idea, anybody who's ever used this medicine and is still with us will testify. It's not just that I believe it or know it. They will verify it with you. Believe me. It's astounding the response that this medicine causes. It shuts off the hormone that blocks the immune system. You change your diet a little bit, go into more alkaline diet, more plant-based diet. You oxygenate your body, maybe prayer if you're of that mind. But the will to live outweighs any medicine, regardless of this medicine or any other medicine. It's your will to live is most important, first of all. But to strengthen the immune system simultaneously to using this is almost immutable, almost omnipotent, almost. So, yes. Does it work? Absolutely. Does it absolutely work? Maybe. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me. So where do people go to get the book then? We've got about 90 seconds, two minutes left.
You go to harmless714x.com, and you can immediately download it. If you insist upon a written version, paperback version, you get on Amazon, Do No Harm, Defying a Hopeless Prognosis with my name, and it'll come up, and you can get the paperback, and they'll mail it to you within days or however long it takes. So that's the primary way. And I'm happy to ask any question. People want to call me directly or write to me directly. I'm wide open. I don't turn anybody down. If somebody wants to argue with me, or I'll do that too. I'll take anybody on. There's nobody. You cannot defeat me with 3 minutes on the internet after I've done it for 30 years. It's just impossible. And you think you know something? Maybe you do. I mean, there's Harry Hoxie. He's been out there for almost 100 years. He's that Hoxie therapy is still working. Hydrazine. back in the post-war Germany after the Nuremberg trials. Dr. Andrew Ivey came home from the trials, and he was a panelist. He brought home Kreviazin from Germany. They crushed him. They destroyed him. Royal Raymond Rife back in 1920 destroyed him. Dr. Stanislaus Brzezinski in Texas, they were trying to destroy him for 40 years. He's still plugging away. Andy Wakefield from your own neighborhood. Look what they did to him because he fought against, and same with Len Horowitz. They fought against vaccination. So, A, you have to be aware of what's going on. B, when you use 714X, it's only a half cc. I don't know how to describe a half cc on radio other than the fact that maybe it's as much perfume as you put on your face is too much. You know, if you put on cologne, a half cc, that's probably just about right for your whole once a day. So it's not a whole lot of medicine, causes no side effects, and you become knowledgeable. That's the key. Know what you're talking about. When a doctor tells you have cancer and there's no hope, you got to get in right away. He said, excuse me, doctor, how many patients you've had in the last 10 years and how many are still alive today? I want people to be so confident when they go to a doctor that they, when they're told they have cancer, they say, oh, thank God. I thought it was something serious.
Great to chat with you, Charles. Thanks for coming on the program today. I'll just mention again, folks, harmless714x.com. Harmless714x.com. You'll find more information about the book there and how you can buy it. You've been listening to Charles Pixley live on the radio show this afternoon. I really appreciate your time, Charles.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. And I doubt we'll speak again in the future. I really appreciate your time today. That was Charles Pixley live on the Richie Allen radio show. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Got to go now. I've not even got a tune lined up. Absolutely gripped by that I was. So I've not got any music lined up to go out of the programme with. Big shout out to Jim Feltzer, who was on the programme in the first hour. Chuck Ocelli is among the guests on tomorrow's Richie Allen radio show, which will be with you at 5 o'clock. Usual time, usual channels. Before that, though, I'll be with you on the live stream nonsense tomorrow on YouTube. At 9:30 in the morning, the newspaper thing. Until then, bye from me. Bye now.